Good afternoon, Atlanta. Matt Gardner here, one of your co-hosts with Everything Atlanta. It is Tuesday at high noon, so that means we are here and we are ready. Joined, as always, by Mr. Danny Broadway of Yepser Internet Strategy. Danny, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Matthew. How are you today?
I'm doing good. You been catching any of the Olympics here?
I have. As I mentioned last week, I am an enormous fan of the Olympics. I've truly enjoyed it. Water polo is happening right now. We are in overtime, and we are up by two last-second goals. But the greatest event that I've watched is that women's soccer game
yesterday. We caught the first part there at the office, and then the U.S., like you were saying, couldn't put a goal or the ball within 45 feet of the goal.
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden just rattled off 1-2-3 and went to extra innings. Or they get it done in regulation?
Yeah, it went to the second extra inning, I guess you would say. I don't know what they call it in soccer. I'm not a soccer player, but it came down to literally the last 3 seconds mm-hmm. of the second extended play, is actually, I remember.
Yeah,
now.
That was fun to watch.
And a nice little header. She went way high. It was just amazing. I mean, that's what Olympics are all about.
Yeah, it is. It's fun to watch and kind of get engrossed with it and follow your favorite sports and your favorite athletes. Andy, what about you? What's been your favorite to watch this past 10 days?
Well, you know, it's a little bit of a conflict because there are things that I like to watch and things that I'm interested in the outcomes of. I mean, obviously, I'm interested in the triathlon, which was very competitive this year, women's and men's. But let's be honest, it's not really exciting to watch until they get to the finish line, which was exciting. We had a photo finish in the women's and some pretty good times in the men. But, you know, for me, I like the things that are a little more action-oriented. So, you know, I like to watch the swimming because the finish comes fast and furious. And, you know, the gymnastics is always a nail-biter. And, of course, I like the volleyball.
Yeah, that's fun to watch.
Yeah, I like the beach volleyball, too. But the guys
got knocked out last night.
Yeah, I saw that. That really stinks, man. But, you know, you're on the edge on all those where you have one bad game and you're done, you know. But, yeah, and the hard court, they hit the ball so hard, it's incredible. I've never
amazing.
Seen anything like that.
Well, let me ask you guys, you know, we're all digital. We're all at the touch of a button away from information on our phones and social media. How have you prevented being spoiled by not, you know, waiting for your favorite event that night because it's obviously shown 15 hours after it really happens? How have you guys not been spoiled on who won or who did what?
Well, I just can't talk to my wife during the day. She can't stand not to know. Just like I DVR football games, I DVR a lot of things, and especially hockey games. And you know, I just tell her you can't tell me because she can't stand not to look. I mean, she lives on her phone.
Yeah, so. Because on Facebook, you know, they're saying who did this, who won. You know, AP puts out a news wire. ESPN's dinging my phone with every lap of the pool there. So it's been tough not to know who wins before you even turn it on. So
I have a different perspective on this, and you guys know my stuff's always a little bit renegade, right? So you know, I look at it as a time management tool. I mean, I hear people, no, don't tell me what happens. I want to watch the game. You know what? If my team lost or got their butts kicked, why do I need to waste 3-4 hours watching that? Just tell me the outcome. You know, if they won, let me go see how good they did. If they lost, I'll find something else to do with that time.
The excitement's not there if you know they win in the end.
I don't know. You know, I disagree.
Like knowing that goal went in off her head at 2 seconds till, I guarantee you wouldn't have been as good if I knew it was going to go off her head at 2 seconds till. It's the fact that I jumped up and down screaming.
But you don't have to know that. You just have to know that they won.
Nah.
Yeah.
No. The whole point of sports is the excitement of the moment and the build up.
If the header had gone off her head at 2 seconds to go and she'd missed it,
right,
and they'd lost, would you really care that
they would have lost? They would have gone to penalty kicks. But that's not the point. Like you said, the point is when you watch something for 2 hours and the emotional build up and the drain and the excitement and you're on the edge of your seat and you've put all this time in, and that's sports. Sports isn't the score. Sports is the activity of engaging with the athlete. 100%. I mean,
I told you it was renegade thought. I'm all about the winning and losing. Let's just get it done. Win, lose, let's move
W's
on.
And the L's.
So your favorite sport would be a 1 minute basketball game.
Yeah, man. I don't need the emotional coddling. I just want to know who's better and let's move on.
Everybody right. take a
Whoever
shot.
Wins the tip wins.
Let's just flip the coin and move on.
I love it. Well, then talking on the same vein of winning and losing here, we are very fortunate today to have a young lady by the name of Karen Lee into the studio with us to talk a little bit about wins and losses as far as bank accounts go. So, Karen, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Glad you could join. We've been anxious to have you on the show and glad you're here. Couple of things about Karen that I'm going to let you kind of talk to on both sides. Number one, the financial planning, wealth management side of your world, and also the coin, flip the coin over. And we have somewhat of a public speaking, more of an exciting perspective, if you will, on the way you view money and the experience with it. So if you don't mind, Karen, tell us a little bit about the first part, about the wealth management, the bread and butter of your of what you do when you wake up every morning.
Sure. When I was 25 years old, I went searching for a career that would allow me to be a mother while working. And I found financial planning as an option, went into it, and within 1 year fell in love with it and thought, this is my calling. This is how I can help people. And they told me that after about 5 years, you would have created a business where you could then write your own ticket. In other words, have the kind of schedule you want. So as a planner myself, I thought, well, that works. 25, five more years, I'll be 30. I knew I was going to get married at that point and figured put off having the family for 5 years. So that's what I did. And I started sort of going part-time around 30 years old so that I could be there for my children as well as work and earn a living. For about... 10 to 15 years, I was a very happy camper. I kind of had it all, as women these days would say, in that I had a successful career. I could make it to my kids' daycare events or first grade events, be a room parent, be a soccer mom. And in the business world, I felt like I was really making a difference in people's lives. You know, I was helping them take a look at what they were doing financially and plot their course towards the things that were important to them. Somewhere around 10 years ago, I became frustrated with the industry because what I realized was that some people can follow a financial plan just like they could follow a diet. But other people, and in fact, I found that it was the majority of people, couldn't stick with the plan. They fell off the wagon at some point. And usually they might have strayed and not left my practice, or they might have stayed in. Maybe they had an account with me, but they weren't each year moving closer to their financial dreams. So it was challenging for me. And but just to finish up, I still have this active 24-year practice where I help, coach, and direct people with what to do with their money. The next part of what I'm doing, which you called more exciting, and I tend to agree, was an outgrowth of the frustration from my financial planning practice, where I knew I was helping people, but not enough.
So, you know, the big question, and we'll go ahead and ask it, then we can kind of back into some of the other ones, is why does money cause so much trouble?
Right.
Whether it's between people, between families, between you and the guy who you're buying your cleaners from. You know, if you're dissatisfied with a spot on your shirt, the biggest thing you want to do is punish him by not paying him.
Right.
So why is money this factor?
Well, to look back at where my frustration came from, say, I'd ask the question, why can some people follow that financial plan and other people can't? And in today's day, I would say the large majority have trouble sticking to that financial plan. And what I came up with, true or not, is that we've all formed a deep-seated relationship with money over the course of our lives. And that relationship varies wildly from one person to another. And I'll give you an example using myself. I grew up with what I call a fear of never having enough. So a deep need for financial security, and money represents security for me. And this is an outgrowth of the fact that my father was an immigrant. He was born in Cuba, moved here when he was 13, very, very poor, lived most of his early life that way. And so he raised us kids, although we were middle class, we thought we were poor. From that, for me, I, over time, became... very, very cautious about spending and very, very focused on saving. So what happened when I started looking at how come so many people can't stick to the financial plans I show them and follow all my advice, I looked at myself and said, well, how come I can? And I realized, well, I have my own dysfunctional relationship with money. I'm scared of it, right? Most people of our generation, money is something they've been taught that can buy them stuff, and the belief that stuff will make them happy. And there's something messed up in that view. And so what I say, Matt, is that you're not going to be able to follow a financial plan until you take a deeper look at what money means to you. and the purpose it serves in your life. Mm-hmm. So you're jumping ahead to, why does it cause problems when I go to the dry cleaner? Why do my wife and I fight about it?
Right.
And I would say, let's back up a little and look at, well, what's your relationship with money?
Mm-hmm. So you have a book that's out there.
I do.
And let's talk a little bit about that, because sure. I've skimmed it and read a couple of the chapters here and there. And it's pretty interesting because it's more about the experience that people have with money and the perspective to be able to take away from that. So talk a little bit about the book and how your 24 years in dealing with money kind of propelled you to write this book.
Right. So the book's called It's Just Money. So Why Does It Cause So Many Problems? And what it's, I wrote it in a chicken soup for the soul sort of format. Mm-hmm. I find that most people cannot get through a typical book on finance, but they can read little works of fiction, mm-hmm. which tell stories. So they're little vignettes about whether it's couples or individuals, small businesses, and situations that people find themselves in. Some of them are success stories. Some of them are failure stories. The reason I wrote it is I wanted to try to bring to light helping people look at what I would call the psychological drivers behind the money decisions that they make. So for my example, the reason I save so much, in fact, to the point that early in my marriage, it was literally problematic because my husband wanted to spend more and I wanted to save. So it caused problems. That's why it caused problems. I had to look at my psychological driver, which was I'm scared that I won't have enough, and then start to work on that issue. So I wrote it to try to help people take a look at themselves through hearing the stories of other people. And
are there solutions after that analysis?
There are, you know, the book is more of a starting place, mm-hmm. of a starting place. I've broken the book into three thirds. The first third are the types of problems I see. On my end, fear of never having enough, to the other extreme of spending money way beyond what you own. I call it spending money you haven't earned yet. Mm-hmm. So living with debt as a regular part of your life. Mm-hmm. The middle section would be all about relationships. So the interaction between you and a spouse, the interaction between you and your children, what happens, and I've seen this over and over and over, when the parent dies and there's some inheritance, large or small, causes problems. Mm-hmm. Divorces, things of so relationships. The last third is more solution oriented. Now it's still told in story format, but it helps explain, if you looked at a financial planning pyramid, why does a person need life insurance, disability insurance, long-term care? Why do we need to diversify? And it teaches those lessons by showing what happens if you don't do those things or if you did do those things.
Right. Very interesting, and I guess that kind of answers my question. But from your kind of first round of financial planning, you know, you mentioned there were these reasons that people can't save, or there's reasons, you know, that people diversify from the plan. And I was going to ask you what are those major reasons, but it sounds like you've really identified those in the book and addressed them.
And there could be more than those, but sure. I sort of looked back at that 24 years of experience and said, what are the main areas people fall into?
Right.
And it's kind of interesting to hear you guys talk about the limbics earlier, because I'm thinking one of those problems is when people have windfalls, or a year or two that they have excess income, like a mm-hmm. dramatically good year in their business. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking of all these Olympic athletes, mm-hmm. the ones who do really well in the Olympics are going to come into this window of time where they're going to have windfalls, whether it's endorsements.
And they're only going to have one or two Olympics in their life.
Now, there might be some that it does become a lifestyle, but let's face it, some of these little gymnasts, they're going to have a couple of years of endorsements, and then they're going to get married, have kids, and become a stay-at-home mom.
Right.
So what do you do? That's a problem, because Americans, we love to say, oh, this newfound wealth, it's going to last forever. Mm-hmm. And we see this with NFL, NBA stars all the time. They think they're going to have a full career of it. They get injured, and it's a short-lived window.
And so sometimes it's a matter of, you know, if you do have that two or three great year period and you don't overspend, but you definitely set a lifestyle in place to live off, and you tell me the percentages, say 70-80% of that income and save whatever the difference is. Again, I don't know what it is.
Right.
You can tell me the answer to that. It's probably a question more than a statement. But then beyond that, you know, if that fails or that goes away, you know, how do you address not going into debt or downsizing or whatever those things are?
You hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
It's all about the lifestyle that's created. Mm-hmm. And the answer is that if someone came to me and said, wow, looks like I'm going to earn a million or two mm-hmm. over the next year or two, what should I do? Mm-hmm. I would give them advice initially that had to look at perhaps this will be the one time you earn that. Now, I've always said if someone earns a couple million or a million,
they should
once,
be gone.
Exactly. Yeah. We can set them up for life.
Right.
How many times do you hear of someone who had that great wealth, and then you hear they've gone bankrupt?
Right.
And it all is in the lifestyle choices. They made decisions that required an ongoing income stream at that level.
Correct.
So what I'm going to tell people is let's assume it's a short little period of time. What do you want the future to look like? How can we set that up? Now we can back into what kind of lifestyle can we create that can be self-fulfilling?
Right.
Well, another thing that I felt was kind of interesting, and you and I had this conversation a month or so ago when we first met, is, you know, people that live in a neighborhood. You and I live, Danny, in a very social neighborhood. And, you know, you could walk down the street and tell me, you know, in this house right here, they have this kind of problem with their marriage. Their kids are having this kind of problems. But you probably couldn't answer, how much money does the guy make? Now, you know, why is money such a taboo conversation to have with somebody? I mean, you know, you come up and people will just unload their world's problems on you. But if you ever talked about money, they get offensive.
Right.
What do you mean? What's my house payment? But let me tell you what my husband did last night.
Right,
you know?
I mean,
why is money such a taboo conversation?
I wish I could answer that. All I know is that that's a true statement that you just said. Money's like the last taboo.
Yeah.
I mean, people will go on national television, talk about their sex lives, talk mm-hmm. about anything. But we will not ask a person how much do they earn? What did you pay for your house? Some of it's public record, and we can't talk about it.
Right.
It's rude. Something about the way we were raised in this country, it's rude.
Because we have our house on the market right now, and people will come up and like, you know, I don't mean to be rude, Matt, but what are you asking for your house?
It's not rude.
I'm like, well, first of all, you can go to this MLS.
Drive by and dial 1-800 and put my code in.
You're right.
But they'll ask the most absurd question on the other side of the coin, which does offend. But people are just so funny about
how are you and your wife's sex life, Matt?
Yeah.
You know, like,
when's the last time?
How about I tell you how much my house is? Yeah. How about that?
Would you be offended if someone said, can I ask you what you paid for it and how long you've been in that house?
Oh, see, I wouldn't.
I mean, wouldn't either.
It doesn't, you know, because it doesn't bother me. You know, I mean, what are they going to judge me that I made a good decision or a bad decision? I made the decision because
I
needed to move to Atlanta.
Right.
And there was only in 2004, there was only two homes left in Atlanta to purchase, and I purchased one of them. And now there's 1,500 to purchase in my neighborhood alone.
So another thing that's interesting about you all being neighbors and looking at up and down the street at everyone, you'd think in a neighborhood that had houses in a range of whatever, that most people would be, therefore, in the same socioeconomic situation.
Mm-hmm. And they're not.
Of course not. Yeah. What you're probably going to find is some people who have stockpiles of money. They're multimillionaires, and you'd never have thought it. On the other hand, you've got someone that if they lose their job, they're one paycheck away from going into foreclosure.
Correct.
Right. And then hopefully you guys somewhere in the middle there, right?
Yeah. Again, I don't talk about that.
But we're not talking about it.
Don't say anything.
How's your sex life?
Exactly.
Can we talk about sex right now?
Exactly.
Yeah, well, welcome sex therapist.
That's another fun thing about my business is I've always said that, you know, somewhere along the way I should have gone and earned a psychology degree.
Right.
Because we do so much therapy.
Well, a lot of your book is
office.
About the psychology of money.
Exactly.
And so much revolves around money. I mean, you can wake up tomorrow not being loved. But you're not going to get too far without having money to put in the gas can or, you know, those. So it does take money to make you exist.
Yes, it does.
But it doesn't. You know, I mean, there's a lot of emphasis put on, you know, how much money we need to make. And you know, when you make some, you know, when Danny and I make any money, the first thing that we think about is, oh, God, we got to give some to the government now. I mean, it's not what can we do to grow our business or what can we do to enhance our lifestyles. He and I worry about money from a very the more we make, the more we lose.
Yeah,
and, you know, that's
we get
that's
further
hard.
Behind every time we make a buck.
Now, you guys are a great example. I have seen partnerships not work because the psychology and the philosophies about money between the two partners are so different.
Yeah.
One's a big spender. one wants to plow it all back in the business, et cetera.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, it's a difficult balance to go through,
right.
You know?
But to your point before about the psychology and that my book is primarily about that, I guess what I would actually say is I think it's the part that's missing in traditional financial planning, because I believe that the psychology is 90% of the effort. It's 90%. It's the key ingredient that's going to determine what I would call financial success, which might be different than what you would call. But to me, financial success is that whatever your dreams and plans and goals are, you're on track for those things.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know it's random, but, you know, you hear of the Dave Ramseys and, you know, like he even tries to put a faith type spin on it and that type of thing. Are you influenced by any of that or?
Well, people ask me all the time, you know.
Because it's very sounding of that kind of, not no debt at all, but like Dave. But, you know, just that kind of feel. Money will never make you happy. Control, you know, not money controlling you is the worst thing ever. You know, I'm hearing that undertone. Is that an influence on you at all?
I would have to say, no, it's not an influence.
Okay.
But only because I've developed these thoughts on my own and because I've been in this business, I don't tend to listen into Dave. I don't tend to listen into Susie. And so people will ask me that and I'll say, you know, I might be saying the exact same thing he's saying or she's saying. I don't know. I don't listen to them. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying from my life experience, I'm telling you, this is the core issue that we need to deal with when it comes to money. And then we can make the money, the logic, rational money part work.
Right.
Well, let me ask this question. I mean, because you're talking about the psychology of money and you mentioned kind of diets earlier and you were talking to kind of relating the two. Do you have kind of a philosophy that you try to bring people into, or do you simply try to help them adjust to their own philosophy? I mean, like, again, thinking diet, some people are fat and happy. You know, they don't care. They're not trying to get in shape. They're not trying to look good. They just want to feel good, and eating makes them happy. And then you know, others make themselves miserable because their psychology is going for the thin look, and no matter how they feel, they want that. So do you see that in money as well?
That's a great question. Typically, I don't have to answer it because most people come to me through the financial planning side of my true business, and that what they want is for me to help them reach their goals. So they're coming to me saying, not, I'm in debt and I'm just fine with that. Or, I'm sitting on a couple million dollars and I'm just fine with that. They're coming to me saying, look at what I've got. Listen to what I want and tell me how to get there. So they're asking for my help. The analogy would be, they are the overweight person coming in and saying, help me become the best physical me I can be. And then my question to them would be, all right, you've got all the intellectual knowledge about calories, about fitness, and you come to me with all that. How come you can't stick to it? There must be an emotional or psychological problem that makes you unable to stick to that diet and exercise plan. Let's work on that. So when people come into me, I quickly figure out which camp they're in. They're either the savers or the spenders. And then I want to address those underlying issues at some point. It's easier with the savers. They usually have enough, and I just have to help them see that it's enough. But the spenders are tough cookies.
Can a saver become a spender at some point?
I'm a saver who has become a spender, so yes. But I'm not an overspender.
Yeah.
But I've learned to loosen up in recognizing that I function from a place of fear of never having enough. I've learned to be able to, within reason, enjoy the fruits of my labor.
Because I think a lot of it is even the generational stuff you hear about, you know, of you know, my mom and dad have never had a dime of debt and bought all their houses. They were given one to start, which helped that program. I bought my first house. But beyond that, I mean, you know, they were kind of ahead of the game coming out of the gate and stayed there because, you know, the parents before and that whole thing. And, you know, then they say our generation is willing to take on that debt and push that edge. And, you know, we feel like we can earn past it and things like that. And then the new generation, they don't even care about money. They just care about happiness.
Exactly.
So whether they're making 20 grand a year or 200 grand, they'll live within those means because, number one, they can't get credit anymore. And number two, they really just want happiness. And I love that. I love that generation has that. I think it's almost to a detriment sometimes.
Do you have children?
I do, but they're very much younger. But I have friends in the neighborhood who have those kids coming out of college. And I honestly see that. I see them taking jobs, making half of what they probably could make in a miserable situation for themselves, taking a job they don't want, and they'll take the job that that has potential that will make them, that has the chance to give them happiness beyond wealth.
Yeah.
And it's really cool to watch those changes in the generations. But I think I've come from a generation where I was my father for a long time. I would save a dollar out of every two to a guy who's, you know, kind of living on that edge, just right. like my generation right. is doing now, where I, you know, my money is pretty much allocated when it comes in.
Well, there is a tremendous generational shift that's happened, and it's mm-hmm. not just economics, but you have to look back at our parents who either lived through the Great Depression or their parents lived through the Great Depression. And so fear of financial insecurity ruled that generation.
Right.
Then we had the onset of the credit card. You know when the first credit card came out? You're shaking your head like, yes.
Oh, do I know
do
the
you
day,
know?
The year?
Yeah, the year. What year was the first credit card?
Oh, it was probably
1949 actually was Diners Club. Y'all are probably too young to remember that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
Diners
then
Club.
1950.
Kelly Savalas,
man.
Yeah.
And then the Visa entered the world in 1950. So think about people like us. Okay, our parents, they didn't have a credit card. Of course they function from a different point of view.
Right.
We've had credit our whole life.
Right.
But we've had a little bit more understanding of how to use that. The younger generation, they think that card is magic. It's
yeah.
just loaded with money and you just swipe it. Yeah, mommy, just use your card. Right. So that is a huge part of what's shifted. But and so when we look at the problems, the financial problems that exist in our country, we have more people on the brink of bankruptcy. We've just lived through the worst foreclosures this country's ever seen. Why? Easy to figure that out.
180% financing.
Well, that yeah. doesn't take brain surgery. You know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand yeah. why we're in that boat. Is the pendulum swinging back? I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. And I'm worried about those kids that just pursue happiness. I get your point.
Yeah.
I love that too.
Yeah, no,
here I am trying to do that,
right.
pursuing that which makes me happy. But there's also some real reality base that has to exist.
See, I agree with you. I'm not saying that it's right. I'm just saying kind of what it is and
what
I've
it is.
Seen. And I work with youth groups and
right.
stuff, so I kind of hear that. You know, they truly believe that they're, and I think there's something to be appreciated in a kid
there
who
is.
At 17, 16 says, I'm going to go do what I want to do. But at the same time, it doesn't always work out. You got to take a job. You got to pay for yourself.
Right. They know? Still the problem I see with
they'll
the,
live
they,
in the basement at mom and dad's house
that's
for
right.
5 years
that's
instead
right.
of like
but
my
when,
dad. I haven't lived with him a day since I started
right.
my freshman year of college.
Right. Well, so that's again a whole generational shift that's occurring. And
right.
will that continue? Will
right.
parents be okay letting their adult children live with them?
Right.
And in fact, when they get married and move out, will they subsidize their income because that generation has followed, but this makes me happy.
Right.
And I'm so tied to technology that I deserve an unlimited cell phone package.
Right.
I need to have the newest MacBook or
right.
everything else. And I live in a generation where it matters, the label on my clothes. You raised me that way, mom and dad.
Right.
So will you continue that for me too?
Right. Yeah, yeah. For me, the cutoff was college. The cutoff wasn't marriage. And I think now the cutoff has become a marriage, not
right.
a college. So.
Well, it's shifted is what it is.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. I
yeah.
not one. I come three kids in my family and not one of us ever moved back home after college,
right.
nor loaned money, nor had to be bailed out,
right.
nor borrowed money for
and
down
I got
payments.
Help with college.
Of course.
So that was cool. And I even asked Dad, I got an MBA, and he kicked in a little bit to
mm-hmm.
get me through that. So
mm-hmm.
I was well taken care of.
I
don't
agree.
Get me wrong.
My parents too.
Put me back in a house with my mom at 22, and we would have had major issues because
yes.
we didn't agree.
Well, the biggest thing that I wish we as a society did was to educate young people in high school even on how the economy works. You know, just because I came through when I got out of high school, I didn't really understand how dollars and cents worked to
but
a degree.
But you just said how the economy works, and do you know? And this is one of my big pet peeves. Economics, since I was in high school 30 years ago, that's a required course to graduate.
Yeah.
But personal finance isn't.
Yeah.
Now,
how much does
M1, M2, M3 in macroeconomics affect my life today?
Right.
Very little. But
right.
personal finance, that should be the required course.
Yeah, and when I say economics, that's exactly what I was
that's
trying
what
to
I meant.
Say.
I knew you meant that.
The personal financial, how to, you know, somebody taught us how to balance a checkbook at church, and that was about it. Because when I showed up at Auburn University in 1992, I stood in this line to get my textbook, I stood in this line to get my student ID, and then I stood in this line to get a Visa MasterCard. And I thought that was the the three lines you got in, because everybody
first
moved
thing
from
you
line
do is take you get four credit card offerings in your little mailbox the first.
And
day
do you know
open
what
it.
The new credit card laws say now? They're not allowed to be within like 1,000 feet of a college.
But so I stood in that line and I got my War Eagle Visa card.
Right.
And I thought, great, they sent it to be in your mailbox in 5 days. So I started using the card. And then one day it didn't work.
God.
So I called the 800 number on the back and said, hey, my card's not working. What's going on? And they said, well, you know, you owe $500. You've reached your max or whatever the conversation was. So I was like,
what max?
What do you do
what
now?
What are you talking about? So, that's a great story.
But so, you know, but anyway, we could go on and on about that. So I guess my next question to you, before we wrap up, is, you know, what does the next 30, 60, 90 days of your life look like? You know, I know you're a contributor on CNN a lot.
Yeah.
But what do you want to be doing as you approach a milestone in your life here in a couple of weeks? Well, what's the next 6 months of your life look like?
Well, my goal is just to try to help more people than I can help in my regular job, my day job, where, you know, quite frankly, I am an entrepreneur. I run a business just like you guys. I have overhead. I can't work with everyone. I can only work with people who have money to invest with me or can pay a retainer for a financial plan. So my next 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 10 years is how can I help all those other people that aren't going to set foot into my office, whether it's through television, radio, writing books, blogs, etc. That's the stuff I'm trying to fit into my life.
Well, good. Yeah. Well, again, I think the website we want to point people to is KarenLeeTalksMoney.com. That's where they can obviously get their hands on the book, a little bit more of your social media channels, the Facebook, the Twitter account, the blog, and definitely different ways to connect. Is there any other ways that you want people to reach out to you if they know some people who are looking to invest half millions or things like that?
Well, you can always go to my regular website, which is KarenLeeAndAssociates.com. There's also good information there just about traditional financial planning and about my financial planning practice. So please always feel free to reach out there. But if you're just looking to interact with me from a one-on-one point of view and find out more about the way I think, I would go to the Karen Lee Talks Money site.
Yeah, and absolutely. And go to the Facebook page and ask your questions there. And just to kind of have that conversation that we've been having here for the last 30 minutes, which is kind of fun to talk about money. I don't know. There's a lot of questions and you know, some different perspectives as far as to save or to spend or what you do. And,
well,
you know,
you know, I think like everything in life, there is some positives from each generation to take away when it comes to money. It's about finding that balance. I'd love to see it become not so taboo so that people can openly talk about it and get more help. I'd love to see it get into the school systems.
I would too.
And it probably will over time. So all of that is good. And, you know, it's just about getting the conversation going. Yeah. And getting
or even into the workplace. I've heard of different programs in the larger companies where they do offer classes, you know, around the concepts that you have.
Because you're not born with the knowledge on what a 7-1 arm is. I didn't know one was until I had one.
Well, and the other dilemma being that our parents taught us more. Parents today aren't, unfortunately, they're not as skilled to teach their kids because they don't have as good money skills.
Right. They don't want to talk about the subject because it's so sore.
Because they're not in a good place and they don't want to have to admit it.
I don't have to admit to my daughter that we're spending money we don't have today.
Right.
Yeah, that future you had,
it's gone.
That ice cream cone, we technically didn't buy that. We just kind of rented it
for a little
while. SunTrust
Bank owns that ice cream cone.
I'm now hoping that you make a lot of money so you can support me in my old age.
Exactly. Well, Karen, I can't thank you enough. I'm glad you came on the show for
Thanks for inviting me.
Great topics, and we might have to have you as a repeat guest.
Would
on
love
here
to come back.
As some other worldly financial and personal financial things develop. So what I want to do, I want to change things up a little bit, Mr. Danny Broadway.
Okay.
I know that Yepser sponsors this show, YEPSER.com, as a great sponsor, and we're glad to have them. And typically, we do a social media moment at the end of every show, but I wanted to kind of let you talk a little bit about this reputation management business that we at Yepser have been very fortunate to put under our belt here recently and to go out there and offer reputation management to big companies, small companies. So, Danny, if you don't mind, tell us a little bit, what is reputation management and how could a company like Yepser help?
Yeah, no, I can definitely help with that. It's funny, I was put on the spot last week for the social media moment. Matt was spinning wheels in Vegas or something, I can't remember, but no, you're helping a client, but so I did our sales social media moment. But this week, instead of that, I would like to talk a little bit about reputation management. Reputation management happens on the internet. You know, just like used to, you'd have to have a conversation over the fence post about why you don't want to go eat at Bobby's drive-thru because you found a couple of dead flies in the fries. What happens now is instead of that being shared with the ladies group at church over bingo, it's going to be shared over websites. These websites are going to be there to reach millions of people, whether those people live locally or live afar. They are going to pull into a town. They are going to use some type of app on their phone. They're going to use some type of web search. They're going to use Google. They're going to use Yahoo. They're going to use Yelp. They're going to use, if they're going to book a hotel or try to find a restaurant, they're going to use all kinds of different places on the internet. And what has happened, and a lot of companies don't realize it, is there have been hundreds of people reporting on them. They think that they have great customer service and everybody loves them. And when in reality, a lot of times when I sit down with a client and I pull up one or two sites, their ratings are far below 50%. And the things that are being said about them, it upsets them, Matt. It's not even a feel bad. It's a anger. And I let them direct that at me because what they need to do is feel that pain and then understand what they need to do to go fix that. So what we've done here at Yepser is gone from, we're heavy marketing. We help you market through social media and websites and Google and some fantastic opportunities. But what reputation management is, it's protecting what you're doing with your image. And we feel that is as internet strategy focused as we are an internet strategy company as any of those other things. And what I'm talking about here, Matt, is you know, if 5 out of 10 people would come see you if they were not reporting, but 2 out of 5 skip it because you have bad reports, that is direct revenue into your pocket. So what we do is we have programs that will do one of three things. It will either, at some level, at least alert you to the problem so that you can go in and fix it. If you have the skills to do it yourself, we can at least put our system in place. It's very inexpensive to alert you. Secondary, we can go in and not only alert you, but we can go in and help you try to maintain and correct these problems. And what happens there is we're actually going to go in and handle that reporting for you, such as we do with a lot of our social media management packages for companies that don't have time or abilities to do that. But the third opportunity are for those people who truly want to be number one in their market. And that's where we're not only going to report and correct, but we're actually going to go out there and drive positive content to these sites. So obviously that's going to increase your ranking, whether it's already positive or whether it is negative and we're trying to correct it. We're actually going to drive that consumer to engage with you. A lot of people get scared of that, but what they find is even if there's a hard month or two, as you get into it, you truly find what's going to make your business better, whether it's management or product or experience or whatever that is. It's a true customer reporting system while we're handling the reputation correction or acknowledgement if it is already there. So if you have not taken a look at your online reputation, I highly suggest you do that today or you call an expert such as Yepser Internet Strategy to go in and help you do that.
Yeah, very interesting. And I think most businesses are really going to start to feel the pain of this, Danny, when the iPhone switches over to their own mapping software. Because right now with the iPhone, if you want to get directions or find something through the map function, you're bringing up Google Maps. In the not-too-distant future, when you bring up that same map function, it's going to bring up a Yelp-driven map. So as you know, you're looking for that dry cleaner or you're looking for that Chinese restaurant, people are going to be influenced based upon people's reviews of your business. So the good thing is Yepser stands ready to help support and manage that opportunity for you, as Danny outlined it for us. So we're pretty excited about it. Again, it's part of the internet strategy. If you open up a laptop or turn on a computer or flip on a smartphone and you're looking at things, the team over at Yepser can help with all of that. So give us a call or visit yepser.com. So, Danny, good show today. Karen, thanks again for being here.
Great to be here.
You look great as always. So we're glad to see you again.
It's because I don't spend a lot of time watching sports on TV.
That's right. Just give me the highlights.
He gets his scores and gets on the bicycle, buddy. I tell you what.
ESPN Sports Center was made for Andy. That's something we learned today. So again, glad to have everybody here today and looking forward to again next week. And remember, Atlanta, you don't know anything Atlanta until you've listened to everything Atlanta every Tuesday at noon here on Atlanta Business Radio X.